Welcome back to SFG Podcast, episode 10. I am your host, Lion Zion 4, aka not in the mood for AKAs or PKAs. I'm here with my co-host in good and bad times, Coach Sick, aka Mr. Sick, BKA, the scruffy one. Mr. Sick, how you doing today post North London Derby?
Tough day in the office, my man.
That's,
tough day
in the office. Couldn't put it better myself. Literally.
It's been a rough few days, because at work it's tough, you know. Everybody's either Chelsea or Manchester or Tottenham.
Yeah, your job is full of different fans.
Everybody's.
So you got the grunt end of the banter, huh?
Yeah, everybody's a fan of the top six teams, so. And they all won this weekend, so it was even rough.
That makes it even better.
It's like, oh my gosh. But it is what it is, man. You gotta kind of take the wins punches with the losses as they come, man.
Take the wins with the losses, so. Bro. You definitely gotta take the wins with the losses. So, for anyone that hasn't been watching Arsenal in the last 2 days, North London Derby was yesterday. Arsenal lost to Tottenham 2-0. On the day, and we're gonna get into that, obviously, because we have a lot to talk about. And but first, I wanted to just backtrack on the last episode, episode 9. We are on episode 10. We've made it to 10 episodes, so hallmark there, little benchmark there.
Yeah, definitely.
Congratulations to us. You know, I like to thank me. No, I'm just playing. You ever seen that? Who is it that did that Hall of Fame speech? He's like, I'd like to thank my hands for being so great. It was like the NFL wide receiver. It was like, all right, bro. Thank your hands for being so great, I guess. You know what I'm saying? I'd like to thank
you. You got that off,
you know? I think 50 said that too. Off. 50 said like a award show. He's like, I'd like to thank me. Congratulations. Nah, but definitely a great accomplishment. Got the 10, you know what I'm saying? Hopefully 100 more, you know, in better circumstances than this, of course. Hopefully more wins. Don't want to have a benchmark episode on a North London Derby that we lost. That's not ideal, but such is life. So let's get into it. So before the game, Thursday, let's just backtrack to Thursday, because we didn't do a pod about the post game for Europa League. We did play Rapid Wien, as you would call it, in the Europa League on Thursday. And to not much surprise, we beat them. And it was actually a very good game for kids and for the most of the starters alike. It was a 4-1 victory. And we're just going to go through it really quickly, because I really want to focus on North London Derby. But real quick, it was... most of the kids got a lot of playing time. Eddie Nketiah got a goal. Maitland-Niles started in the central midfield position. Reece Nelson got in there too. Lacazette scored a beautiful goal, probably goal of the year for him.
That was a really nice, really nice strike.
Yeah. Emile Smith-Rowe got on and scored. That was really good to see him. I think the Balogun got on too a bit as well. So the goal scorers. Pablo Mari, too, as well, as a center back. Got his first game back since Man City in, what was that, April? So that was good to see him back there, too, as well.
Even Chambers got a little bit of a run out.
Right? Too. Surprised to see that. You know, I haven't seen had a Callum Chambers sighting in a very long time. So good to see him.
I thought he would have been back kind of around when Martinelli is supposed to be back.
Yeah, me too.
With his injury. The ACL, you know, it's nothing to play with, but I'm glad to see he's back.
Nowadays, these ACL injuries have been going very quickly, you know, and it used to be like a solid year minimum. Remember those days? You get an ACL tear, and it's like minimum 1 year before you're like playing again and running around.
Technology and the evolution of these different different workouts and
true technological advances and, you know, sports science and all that good stuff.
Sports science is crazy. It's definitely very rapidly.
Definitely got these guys back on the field quick, so hopefully Martinelli's a part of that, you know.
I heard he's supposed to be getting, I think he's you know, it's probably his choice to like wait so long, but I feel like he could at least play in the 23s game right now. He, like the way he looks, he seems like he's very confident with how his progress is coming. So I feel like he'll definitely get a game with the 23s very soon. Of course, they're gonna big that up once he does play with the 23s. Because I kind of feel like the game that Mari and Chambers played with the 23s kind of got, you know, I don't want to say swept under the rug, but like it wasn't that big of a deal. No, that sounds a bit harsh, but you know what I mean. Understand. Like,
it's not harsh to me.
I feel like it should have got a little bit of a bigger, sighting, but you know, it's okay. Mm-hmm. I do think Martinelli is gonna, you know, be all over the place a little bit more because just how exciting he was before he got injured, was a really, really good sight to see. So yeah, oh my gosh, I think we all are.
I am.
I think we need that badly.
Definitely. So I mean, yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, at least we have some things to look forward to. What I don't look forward to is talking about this game, and I think we need to. I think it's a definitely a point to make, to have discussions like this though about these games, because I mean, at the end of the day, we can do put all the stats together, and you know how we said stats or SPORM goes out the window for Derby days. But as I said in the last episode, I was calling out BS. You know, I was calling out BS because I mean this very much looked like a team in form beating a team out of form, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Definitely. I have no objections to that.
Yeah, so I mean, let's just get right into it. So after such a great showing against Rapid Wien, I think we assumed that we would see at least one or two kids in the lineup, maybe a Reese Nelson, maybe a Joe Willock, maybe a Ainsley Maitland-Niles. And we didn't see that. So it did look like
Reese wasn't even on the bench.
Yeah, Reese. That
dog, like what? I'm sorry, bro. Come on, dog. Come on, bro.
I don't know.
And I don't want to jump the gun because I know we're gonna get to it, but I kinda wanna start right now. Is Arteta in the hot seat, bro? We're supposed to. Nah, bro, I wanna know, bro, cause this is it's like, of course we'll get back to the game, but dog, come on, bro. Like, get it. I mean, he's saying, yo, trust the process, it's gonna be a process. I agree. You know, I feel like he needs a little bit of time to get his style across. But at the end of the day, he needs to not be so stubborn and naive and switch things around, bro. Like he literally is like doing one thing in Europa League, which I understand that these teams in Europa League right now are a lot weaker than what we're playing in the EPL. But yo, if something's working, at the end of the day, they're both professional teams. Like, if that system's working, mm-hmm. try it out in the EPL, because mm-hmm. he has not changed his system in the EPL, not once, bro. And I'm just like, yo, it hasn't worked. We're not creating chances. The only time we're scoring is when you're doing your experiments in the Europa League. So why not just try it in the actual EPL game? And that's what I'm kind of like confused about, because I'm like, yo, you're trying all these different things, which I applaud, because I like the way, you know, it worked very well, that system that he used in the Europa League game on Thursday. Granted, the team's not that strong, but at the end of the day, they're grown-ass men. They battle just like this Tottenham team battled on Sunday. But like, yo, you haven't changed anything up. You have players that are playing well throughout the week, and then they don't make the squad. And then you also have players that are on the field that aren't doing shit, and they're still playing. So I'm just like, yo, when is the change going to happen? Like, when are you going to actually see these, you know, these little mistakes and these little things that are not helping our team? So that's what I'm I want to ask you, like, yo, what's good? Like, is he in the hot seat, or is this kind of still his year to kind of, you know, figure things out and kind of, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. figures things out for himself, not even just for our team, because he as a coach, you know, he's relatively new and he's very young, so he has some growing pains that he's going to have to go through. But what do you think, bro? You think this is – if he stays, you know, I don't think he's going to stay in the 15th, like the bottom half of the table, but – if he doesn't pick this shit up quick, what you saying? You think he still gets the little grace period, or is he kind of, you know, not really in the hot seat as of yet because he doesn't really have his players that he wants? You know, he's looking for a certain profile, rah, 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 blah, blah, blah. You know, we spoke about all this stuff. So what do you think, bro? What's your take on this?
Personally, I think that when you lose a North London derby, it's natural for you to be in the hot seat. It's natural for the media to come out and pose questions. And, you know, it's natural for people to have concerns, especially when you lose in a 2-0 fashion like that we lost to, that we really didn't look like we were in the game until maybe a little bit before the first goal. And by second half, I didn't see us coming back at all. Especially with Partey being out injured, which we'll get to that.
Yeah, but, definitely.
Excuse me. I don't necessarily think he's in the hot seat. I don't think that the board would be as foolish to put more unnecessary doubt in Arsenal, within the club. I think that the players have definitely let him down. I think that's 100%. A big part of that. Now, with that being said, the players are deploying what your tactics have been, have been in period. Like, the players are trying to do that. And, you know, during the interviews with him coming out and saying that, you know, they were doing what we asked to do, and it doesn't look good, or it looks contradictory within the tactical setup. And we'll talk about that too. Those are more of the questions. Those are more the questions, because you have to ask yourself a question. If you know that you're playing a specific style that not only the players have issues with, or the players struggle to adhere to that specific style of play, it plays into the hands of the other team, of a Jose Mourinho Tottenham team. When you cross the ball 19 times in a specific game. And
we'll get to that too.
And it looks like, you know, when you have those type of crosses and aerial pursuits in that sense, with strikers that struggle to score headers or struggle aerially, you have to ask questions, right? Now, with that being said, on the other side, you know, when we had a manager in Unai Emery that was much like a stopgap manager that was there to specifically try and win games right now, to kind of, you know, stopgap, you know, the new manager, and kind of help us weather the storm. And we would play every single game almost adhering to the opponent and play every single game, basically changing formations to suit the opponent. We also didn't like that. Right. We also complained as a fan base that We were playing too pragmatic. We didn't have a sense of identity. Wasn't that the big thing? It was a big identity word. Whenever during Emery's reign, we didn't know what the identity was, and there was always an issue. Now we know what the identity is. It's just not working, right? It's just not working. And I think a big.
Do we though?
Yeah, I mean the identity is. I mean, I think specifically there's two identities. You know, there's the EPL Arsenal and the Europa League Arsenal for different reasons, obviously for personnel purposes, and that goes back to what you're saying that I do agree that I think the identity needs to change, and maybe we need to switch things up and play how we play in the Europa League in the EPL. But with that being said, there is an identity there. I think from
Let me ask, not to cut you off. What's the identity?
That's what I was going to get to. I mean, from From what, I guess, let me see the best way to put this. I guess since he's gotten here and we switched to the back three, the identity was press, right? It was a pressing style of football where we would press together either from the beginning or have a low press. And then when we won the ball, it was a lot of overloads. That's why it was a three. That's kind of why we play that back three. It's overloads, right? We play through the wings. It's a lot of wing play. It's a lot of, play through our wing backs, Kieran Tierney, Bellerin, get the ball inside, and then a lot of Aubameyang being kind of as a shadow striker in a sense, for lack of a better term, and he gets usually at the end of crosses and stuff like that, and it worked for a while, you know, it worked for a good amount of while. We won the FA Cup, right? But after a while, when teams start to figure out that your overloads on the wings are very easy to defend if you stay compact and you give them the wings, as long as you have enough personnel in the box to stop the production of crosses that come in to the box, it's easy to defend, right? So I think the way that you change that and you combat that is you have enough personnel to where if the wing play doesn't work, you go straight through the middle. City is a perfect example of that, which is why I think our style of play is kind of similar to City's style or under Pep, maybe a few years ago. You would see a lot of overloads on their side. Raheem Sterling, Mahrez on one side. It's a lot of overload. If you look at a lot of the goals that City scores, it comes through wide areas. However, they have this guy, right, named Kevin De Bruyne, right? the best center mid, I personally think, in the world today. And he's able to, when things break down on the sides and things aren't working there, he's able to just drive through the middle of the park. He just drives. And not only does he drive himself, he drives the entire team. Kevin De Bruyne covers so much ground from the start of the 18 on his own half to the 18 and the 6 and the other opponent's half. And he just drives the team forward. We don't have that central midfielder that drives the team forward. We don't. We don't have that second center mid to help retain the ball. We don't have that wide player that's able to beat three players like a Riyad Mahrez. We don't have another wide player on the other end. So we're missing a lot of players. For us to play that type of style of play, that style of football, we need better players. And without those players to consistently do that, we're going to struggle, because once you break down the overloads, what's plan B? That's the biggest question I have right now. What is plan B? I see that there's a clear identity with Arteta, but what is it when that doesn't work? The good managers have a backup plan. What's the backup plan?
You know, bring Ozil back.
That's definitely not the. Now we're going to get to that. I want us to get to that. And we're going to talk about the game first, and then we're going to go back and discuss, because I would love to talk about that. Before it gets definitely into a bigger issue, and I think we need to speak about that. So first, let's go with the lineup first. It was pretty much I guess you could call it a back three, right? Back three, back five.
Yeah.
We got Leno in goal. Hold on. Leno in goal. Gabriel holding Tierney in the back line. So Tierney on the left, Gabriel centrally and holding a right center back. Bellerin on the right wing, Bakayo Saka on the left. The midfield started with Granit Xhaka and Thomas Partey. Everyone was happy to see Partey back, of course. being that he was out and injured last two Premier League games.
I was kind of iffy about that, but
I was too. But the fact that I saw him in training pictures the day before, you know, kind of alleviated a little bit of that out of my mind, I guess you could say. So who else was there? Lacazette and Aubameyang pretty much up front. Because, well, I guess we have Aubameyang on the left, Lacazette in the middle, and Willian on the right side. So that three. That back five, I guess you could call it a 3-4-3. But I told you. I mean, I told you in the last game it was that Willian was going to play for obvious.
I know, but dog, why?
Bro? I mean, we know why.
Why?
We know. I don't know why. I just told you why.
We don't know why.
But we do know why. We know why he played. I'm not saying it's correct.
Why?
I'm not saying it's correct, but listen to what I'm saying. Why, I'm telling you why. Whether you agree with the reason or not, I'm giving you the reason. So you don't have to ask why. You could just say that you don't agree with it then. Because there is a reason. There is a reason. We know what he does defensively that helps us out in pressing. Maybe Reese doesn't do that as well. I don't know. I'm not in practice. I'm not in training. I don't know. I want to see Reese as much as you do. But if there's clearly a reason why that he's not, that there's a reason why Reese didn't make the roster. That is more surprising than him being on the bench. Reese didn't make the roster. And that is interesting, to say the least. Maybe he was battling an injury. I don't know. But for him not to make the roster, and then we have, you know, three other center mids on the bench, that was surprising.
I would even rather seen Joe Willock up there or somewhere around there rather than seeing Willian on the field still.
Bro. I don't think Joe's ready for this type of game, but I would have rather seen Ainsley
Maitland-Niles
play right wing over Willian at this point.
I agree with that. Even Ainsley. But I would put Saka up there on the right, and then
Of course. I mean, I wouldn't start Ainsley. I mean, I really want to see Ainsley in the midfield. But
I just don't get how many chances and how many times does this man have to play and not do anything. Granted, he was playing in some decent balls. I'll give him that. But nah, bro. I don't understand what he hasn't done anything to start or even play.
No, he's not on form. He's not on form, man. I don't even want to spend too much time on Willian, because, like I said, if it's simply just for pressing and defensive purposes, it's clearly that it can't be anything else. We know it's not anything else because he's not offensively. Reese has been a better player than he has in an Arsenal shirt this season, just judging by all the games, Europa and EPL, because Willian has also played in Europa. But let's go into the Spurs lineup. So Spurs played 4-2-3-1. Hugo Lloris in the back, Serge Aurier at the right back, Toby Alderweireld with Eric Dier paired at center back, and their new left back, Reguilon. And also two double pivots, double D mids, I guess you can call them, in the pivot, Sissoko and Højbjerg at the five. And then you got a front three, a midfield three of Bergwijn on the right, absolute baller. Lo Celso at the 10, and Son, another absolute baller, on the left. And then Harry Kane up front by himself. So 4-2-3-1, standard for a Jose Mourinho team. And you just knew from the beginning how they were going to set up. Set up deep, compact, and break. Hit you on the break with Son and Kane and Bergwijn. I mean, just pace. You know, just those three guys. Just running all the time, you know, in Lo Celso. And that's exactly what happened. 12 minutes in, bad cross from Hector Bellerin. Whole team's pushed up. Ball gets played over to Kane in the midfield. Gabriel doesn't break it down, doesn't close down in time. He plays a reverse ball to Son. And Son pretty much gets escorted 30 yards by Rob Holding, and cuts inside about 30 yards out and just tucks it into the corner. Goal.
Why is he not stepping there?
Because he's afraid. Rob Holding is scared out of his mind to see Heung-min Son running at him.
Even if he gets chopped, Bellerin was right there.
Nah, but Bellerin wasn't right there at the beginning. Bellerin made the tackle, then tried to close down Kane, and then that ball That was probably the first mistake. When Bellerin played that bad ball, he should have went straight back towards Son. He got caught ball watching with Kane, assuming that Gabriel was going to close him down, and he just went into the space, and then the ball beat him. So it wasn't really, Bellerin wasn't there. Holding was there as a result of Bellerin not being there. And from the third, from about midfield down till about the 30, or about 10 yards outside the 18, Holding gets there. And then there's a run, a really good run from Reguilon, actually, an overlapping run that kind of put Bellerin and Holding off guard a bit. And that little cut in from Son, it's just too much space. You know, run or no run, it's just too much space. But the run also kind of froze them for a second. It was a really good run from Reguilon. And then Son, you cannot give Son that much space. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
He's got enough quality.
Very poor.
He's got enough quality to put it in the back of the net. And, you know, I can't blame Leno on that. It's a beautiful goal. Really, nothing Leno can do about it.
Yeah. I was going to say, nothing he can do about that.
Yeah. And 1-0. So, I mean, look. Counter, they scored exactly the way everyone thought they were going to score. Like, this wasn't something that came out of the north. I mean, obviously it was a, you know, touch of clash. But it's a Mourinho special. Yeah. You know, defend compact, deep. He's made a living off of doing this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, most of the half, I think we put a lot of pressure on them since then. But
the crazy part about it, not to cut you off, sorry, is that we didn't play terrible.
Yeah, particularly bad. I don't think we defended particularly terrible.
It just wasn't. You just knew we weren't playing bad, but at the same time, you just kind of knew that we weren't scoring.
Yeah, like you had, of course
we didn't really create any dangerous chances, but like we didn't play absolutely horrendous. Like we played decent. We just got caught, and they capitalized on both of those chances that they got, which, you know, was the difference between us and them. We got a couple half chances and didn't put them away, and they got a couple half chances and made something big out of them.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's I think.
And I agree with everything you're saying. You know, it's difficult because at the end of the day, you don't get any style points for losing pretty, right? You know,
exactly.
It is what it is. Yeah. Loss is still going to be loss. So, 45th minute, right before halftime. Again, another breakdown from a bad cross by Bellerin. After actually a beautiful ball played in from Lacazette, who's one of the few players I think could hold their head up during today's game. Him and probably Gabriel. Ball was played into Bellerin. Bellerin plays a bad ball to Aubameyang, and they start another break. Now at this particular time, Partey walks to the sideline. Injured because I think he made a tackle right before then and then came off. So as he's coming off, the break starts and Arteta nudges him back onto the field to see if he can make a tackle and stop this break. But at this point, it's 4v2. It looked like Holding and Gabriel alone, and with Kane, Son, and Co running at you. And that was like a 4v2
at that.
Yeah, point. It was 4v2. Yeah, it was. It was a 4v2. And then, you know, reverse pass gets paid to Kane. Kane, you know, pretty much in the six, blasts the ball to the roof of the net, hits off of the crossbar, and goes in 2-0. Thank you for coming. So let me ask you this. I got okay, a quick question. What do you think about Partey coming off the field? Obviously, hindsight. Hold it, before you even answer that. Hindsight's 20/20, right? We could sit here and say, looking at it now, you know, anything. But at that particular time, do you just go down instead and hope that Spurs? Because Spurs is probably not going to play it out anyways. But do you go down? Do you not come? What do you? Give me your thoughts first before I answer it. What he did.
I was literally going to ask you the same question, but in my opinion, it just comes down to communication, bro, because if you know that you're hurt and you're struggling, you call somebody back, bro. Mm-hmm. It's
I agree.
It's quite simple because yes, you're hurt. We understand you're hurt, but at the same time, You can't just not say anything and just walk away. You had to call somebody back and, you know, make sure you guys are covered in the center of the field, because you can't just, you know,
no,
just,
I said, you can't just walk away. I agree with you.
And I also don't blame him, because, you know, at the time we had the ball when he started walking to Arteta.
Exactly.
Like, we definitely had possession. It just was literally a quick counter as he's walking. Didn't even realize that we lost the ball. And, you know, he's probably thinking like, okay, we can keep the ball for a couple seconds so that way I can talk to Arteta and figure out what the next plan is going to be. As soon as he turns around and looks at the game again, they're already in front of our goal. He tries to – well, he got the nudge, and he tried to do like a quick 2-yard sprint, and then he looked like he almost pulled up again. But, I mean, yes, it comes down to communication, man. Definitely. Like, you got to call somebody back, whether it's Xhaka or whoever's closest to the ball. It doesn't even matter who it is. It could have all been Aubameyang or Lacazette. Whoever's closest to you, you got to call them back, so at least you have a body to slow that.
For sure. Definitely.
That counterattack down.
And as a professional, he should have known better, I think, in that sense, to call someone back. You know, I know a lot of other blogs, and I was listening to Ars blog earlier, and they were killing Partey for this. Like, as a professional, you should know better. Now, I'm not going to kill him too tough, because, you know, he's a new player. He's a new Arsenal player. Maybe not understanding the moment. But that being said, I think I can't
give him a pass on that.
Bro. No, I'm not giving him a pass. I'm not giving him a pass. But I'm not going to say the goal happened because of that. I think the goal happened because we played a poor pass and got hit on the counter again. I'm going to say he should definitely have sat down on the field. I think that he didn't go. I don't think he just went over there to talk to Arteta. I think he was saying, "I'm done. Like, I'm off. You know, like, I need to sub."
But
and maybe thought that the halftime was going to happen. And I think, you shouldn't have did that. Yes, at that point, I think.
But the thing is, I don't blame him for doing that, because if you're hurt and you can't run anymore, okay, I understand.
But don't come off the field. If you're hurt, stop the game.
No,
because of that. Because that could happen. You know what I'm saying?
Back, bro.
Yeah, for sure. Call someone back. But if you're hurt, don't come off the field. Like, if you are hurt, sit on the field and make the game stop. Because there's an off chance
that can happen. If it's not a head injury.
Like, I understand that.
It wasn't a head injury.
I understand that.
They don't have to stop the game.
I understand that. But listen to what I'm saying. You still need to stay on the field. Because regardless of Spurs stopping the game is up to them. That is at their will, right? Because that's gamesmanship at that point. Most teams, especially a Jose Mourinho team, is not going to stop a 4v2 attack because you're off the field, right? However, at least you sitting on the field puts the alarm bells to the rest of your teammates. Just like how you would tell someone to call, just like how you're saying, call someone back, right? At least you sitting on the field is going to show the rest of your 11, oh shit, we have a man down. And that way, maybe when Hector Bellerin plays that terrible ball to Aubameyang, maybe someone pulls a shirt. Maybe someone commits a professional foul. Maybe we don't get hit 4v2. You know what I'm saying? Something could happen. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that it will. But what we know for sure is if you come off the field now, there is no chance you're coming back on the field to help prevent the 4v2. You know what I'm saying? Anything could happen.
I get that.
But I'm just saying, as a professional, you do not come off the field. Let them stop the game somehow, or find a way to get the attention of the referee. But don't come off the field. That's like the worst thing you can do at that point, is to come off the field.
I get that. But at the end of the day, all he has to do, the reason why I'm killing him is not for him going off the field. I'm killing him because he didn't do something as simple as saying, "Yo, Xhaka, get back. I can't run. I'm hurt."
It's the same thing, though, in a sense, because doing that, it's still like, even if you did that, it still doesn't make sense for you to come off of the field, though, because you taking your body off the, we're automatically playing down 10 men. We're automatically, as soon as you're off of the field and with especially being hurt, even now after the fact, Arteta's pushing you back on the field to try to stop a counter. Now you got to run 30 yards and you have and the game just went past you, rather than you standing on, even if you stood in the same spot that he was. That could stop the trajectory of Kane's run or Son's run. Now he maybe have to run around you. Just anything. Be a roadblock. Be a cone. You know what I'm saying? Don't come off though. You know what I'm saying? When you come off now, you're hurting us even more than you just standing there. You know what I'm saying? That's so regardless of telling him to come, and even still, the fact that you have to go talk to Arteta is really null and void, bro. It's a 46th minute. Halftime's about to start. You know what I'm saying? We're literally about to walk into the tunnel. There's nothing you need to say to Arteta right now, unless that you can't mimic to the crowd, to the sideline. You know, put your hands up and do the international sub sign. Show them that, point at your hamstring. There's no reason for you to walk over there and talk to him, is what I'm saying. So, look, like I said, I'm not going to kill him too tough, because how would he know a 4v2 is going to start? How did he know we were going to lose the ball in a second? He doesn't know that, right? But hindsight's in 2020. Hindsight is clear as day. And in hindsight, we look back at it and say, the absolute what can go wrong moment happened. You know what I'm saying? That's exactly what happened. What can go wrong? That could go wrong. That 4v2 could happen right as you're off the field, and nobody knows this. You see what I'm saying? So I think that is the only thing I would blame him for. But as I said, the goal itself, literally the actual scoring of the goal, isn't his fault. Comes down to poor defending. It comes down to getting caught on the counter, especially at the end of halves. How many times do we take goals at the end of half? We take goals at the worst times, bro. The worst times. But it comes back to the same thing. Not being mentally prepared. Not being switched on. The rest of the team should have been there. And it just didn't look good. It didn't look good. And by then, halftime, we're being down 2-0. You know, Jose is going to lock up shop second half and basically say, hey, hit us with your best shot. And that's what we tried to do for 45 minutes. We made a total of, how many crosses did we make? We made a total of,
too many,
16, six. Willian made 16. Two of them were accurate.
By himself.
Kieran Tierney made 10. Of them were accurate. Bakayo Saka made 8. 3 of them accurate. Bellerin made 6. 1 of them were accurate. And then everybody else was at 1. So we're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 10, 20, 36.
Yeah.
44 crosses.
That's too many. That's
44
too many.
Crosses. And out of the 44, 2, 4, 7, 8. Nine crosses out of the 44 many, crosses bro. Were accurate.
Way too many.
9 out of 44 crosses. That is,
you know what's crazy?
Oh man.
Is that we decide to cross the ball when we have nobody that could actually head the ball.
I mean, that's what I was saying, you know.
And then when we had somebody that could actually head the ball really good, we never crossed to him.
What?
It makes no sense.
You mean Giroud? I think we gave Drew. We have a lot of crosses to Drew. Drew missed a lot of chances.
Yeah.
He missed a lot. I think that's a fallacy. I think a lot of people have been saying that, I think the tactical setup wasn't a setup for Giroud aerially as it was back then. Yeah, because we didn't do overloads as much. We had Sagna compared to Hector Bellerin. Or we had left backs like Nacho Monreal compared to Kieran Tierney, who's a better crosser of the ball. So yeah, but at the same time, I mean, the team was still set up around Giroud. You know, Giroud missed a lot of chances, a lot. And I think to be honest with you, we would probably be doing better if we had Lacazette and Aubameyang back then, with prime Ozil and Aaron Ramsey and Santi Cazorla and center midfielders that like to touch and play very dynamic, you know, quick touches, quick 1-2s on the ground, getting the ball into the channels. I think that would have suited Lacazette and Aubameyang more than this current team with really no dynamic center mids. I think this team is probably a little more suited to Giroud, for a guy to stand up in the box and wait for crosses all day long, you know? He still got the chances, but I mean, 20%, less than 20% success rate in crosses is terrible. It's terrible. How do you expect your strikers to score when you're crossing the ball 44 times and only 8 of them are accurate? You know, and the accurate ones are really the ones that are probably the ones that Aubameyang and Lacazette are just fighting to get their head on top of. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not even like it's a great ball. It's probably just a ball that they just ended up getting their head to. You know, so yeah.
If Tierney's not crossing the ball, we shouldn't be crossing the ball as much.
I agree, man.
It's as simple as that for me. We cross the ball way too much for players that don't use their heads. Like Lacazette, the ball's getting whipped in and Lacazette's like backing away.
And no, but actually, like, Lacazette got on the best chance of the night, though. The header, that he got to.
I know.
But I just don't expect the 5 foot. How tall is Lacazette? 5'9".
That's my point.
But he's battling. He's battling, though. He is battling to get there. I think.
I'm not taking that away from him.
Yeah.
I'm not taking that away from him. But I'm just saying, you got him. That's like you said. He's 5'8", 5'9", trying to go against these dudes that are 6 foot.
I agree. And it's just not. It's just tactically, we're a walking contradiction. Tactically, you know, tactically we're a walking contradiction. We have strikers that want the ball at their feet. Willian, Lacazette, maybe Ob wants it in space. Or you know, they really don't want the ball in the air, and we're set up to get the ball in the air, you know, sent to them into the box, and it just and we're wondering why we're not scoring goals, you know. Like, we're wondering why, but then if your team tactically is set up, you know, and your personnel is not set up the way that is, I mean, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense.
We're definitely doing things pretty backwards, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like it comes back to him being naive and, you know, he wants this certain system to work really bad, but the players that he's doing it with are just not.
It's not being good enough, and it's it. Just not. Yeah, it's not. It's not. It's hard to be successful on that as well, too. So I think that. Honestly, it's gonna be difficult, and that's the reason why, going back to what you're asking about Arteta being on the hot seat. I think we have to give him a window. I think Dominic, what's the last name? I really can't pronounce his last name. But I think the center, we're going to call him Dominic from Salzburg. I think he would help out tremendously. I think him and a healthy Partey and a Danny Ceballos is a dynamic center mid, the center midfield that is capable.
The crazy part is that he plays more on the left.
Yeah, but I think he occupies a lot of the same space Xhaka occupies. Within possession, not while he's attacking, but within his possession. And I think him going there would replace Xhaka. And I think Danny Ceballos would be kind of really above or behind Partey in that sense. Because really, Partey could really play anywhere in the center mid. He could be the doc. He can be the box-to-box guy. He could be the D-mid anchor. He could be the roaming guy. You know, I think his best position is probably being deeper. And I think because that way he kind of helps anchor that D mid and helps transition. And I think that pushes up Ceballos and hopefully Dominic, if he comes in, into positions where they can finally combined with a Lacazette or an Aubameyang or a Willian. So now we have a second option instead of doing the overloads.
You know what's crazy to me? I honestly think his best position is being more of like a box to box kind of, and then Elneny just sits.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. But I'd say Ceballos could do that too.
Nah, I don't.
I mean, he has. I'm saying he has.
But I'm saying I want Elneny to sit right in front of the defenders. Partey can kind of, you know, I don't want to say roam, but he has the freedom to go up and down. Mm-hmm. And then Ceballos has the freedom to kind of go anywhere to create for us.
Yeah, I think that's what we should be playing. I personally, but Partey is injured all the time. So with Partey being hurt, it leaves a hole, and it's hard to
all the time.
I'm saying this season. I'm not talking about all the time. I'm just being this season. He's missed more games than he's played so far. And I'm not saying he's injury prone. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just talking about this season specifically. As of right now, we can't play that formation because he's not available to do that. And I think because of that, we don't know when he's going to be available to do that. So because of that, I think that's why Xhaka's been playing a lot more, because Joe Willock, I don't think, is ready. But I would rather see Joe there. I would rather see us play Ceballos, Elneny, and Joe at this point, and let Elneny be the safety valve D mid. Let Ceballos and Joe Willock do the roaming. I think or Ainsley Maitland-Niles, maybe Elneny, Ainsley, and Ceballos. I don't know. Somebody, anybody right now. But I think Granit Xhaka cannot play in these big games. And I've been saying this for a while now. On the day, it just it It looks. I mean, he dominated 110 passes. You know, 91.8 pass percentage. But those stats are very misleading because majority of those passes are going sideways. They're going backwards. They're not in attacking areas. And if you're gonna put someone on the field with their sole purpose to just make sideways passes, Ainsley Maitland-Niles can do that. You know what I'm saying? Joe Willock can go do that, and they can also go and press. They can also not commit four fouls and lead the team in fouls. You know, not make one interception on the entire day, and you're playing in the defensive mid role, zero clearances, one block shot. You know, I think he's a good player for his ability, but I don't think it, like I said, it's another contradiction with this team. The team needs a dynamic center midfield, and he's one of the most least dynamic players in the team. So he gets found out a lot because he can't do the job that we need him to do. He can't cover the ground as quick enough. He commits very stupid fouls, very lazy fouls, because laterally he cannot move that well. And in the attacking standpoint, he's pretty much non-existent outside of maybe dead balls, which he doesn't even take anymore. So what is he there on the field to do exactly? I see him out on the left part of the central midfield, and it just looks like a cone sometimes. You just get the game moves past him when he doesn't have the ball. And when he has the ball, when we try to transition, he turns around and passes it backwards a lot. So, I mean, like I said, I can't blame him by himself. This is a collective issue. It's not just a Granit Xhaka issue. It's not just a Thomas Partey issue. It's not just a Lacazette issue. It's not just an Aubameyang issue. It's a collective issue with the team, right? But these little things create a big thing. You see what I'm saying? These contradictions in the tactical setup of the team creates a big problem, which leads to 2-0. So I don't know who we replace that person, because we're already behind in the midfield. The midfield is the weakest part of this team in all three phases. We can easily agree, and we're already missing our best midfielder. so it doesn't make things easier, and I think that is what makes Arteta more reluctant to play the kids, because he looks at the kids in Europa League, sees how great they're playing, but in possession, it's still not great. There's still times where Joe Willock gets caught ball watching. There's still times where Ainsley Maitland-Niles is caught napping. And against quality, against not, I don't want to say non-quality teams, but against teams like Rapid Wien and Dundek and these Europa League teams that are second division EPL teams at best, what do you think is going to happen against Tottenham? What do you think is going to happen against Wolves? What do you think is going to happen against Leicester? You see what I'm saying? So I sympathize with Arteta in that respect, because yes, it's easy for us to sit on our couches and at home and say, oh, just play Emile Smith Rowe. Why are you not playing Ainsley Maitland-Niles? Why? It's easy. It's easy for us to just say that. It's very easy, but it's difficult when you're in that position and you're looking at development as well as winning games. Right. And what do you prioritize? Development? Okay, let's go talk to the millions of fans, Arsenal fans around the world, and say, hey, give us 3 more years to develop after you waited 12 years or however long you waited with Wenger when he told us that we had to pay off the stadium debt in principle, and then now we could compete with the Bayerns of the world, and we're really not competing with the Bayerns of the world, and we had to restart, and then we had to go get we had to fire Wenger and then go get Emery and then restart another restart with Arteta. Like, how do you tell fans that? How do you tell fans, oh, let's wait another 3 years? You can't. Fans want to win games. People want to win games. Players want to win games. We have to win games. So if we have to win games, then yeah, that means maybe we don't see Reese. That means maybe we don't see Ainsley Maitland-Niles. That means maybe we don't see Joe. But we're not winning games.
Okay.
This is the issue right now, is that we're not winning games. Even not seeing them, right? We're not winning games. So are we at the point of what's the worst that could happen? Let's just go play them. I don't know. Because if we do that and we lose 4-0, what's the backup plan to that? That is my question. That's my question to everyone else, right?
Okay.
What is the backup plan? Let's say we play all the kids. Our next big game is what? Chelsea? I think we play Burnley. Let's say Chelsea comes. We start Ainsley Maitland-Niles. We start Joe Willock. We start Eddie. We start Emile Smith Rowe. And we lose 4-0. Then what? What is the next step?
a good question.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, what is it? What is the what is, because you can only do so much. And then on top of that, it looks worse. It looks worse on Arteta before you even go there. It looks worse on Arteta if you go and do that and you lose, because then it shows that he's running out of options, right? It shows he's running out of ideas. It shows that he's throwing out his tactical setup that he's been working on since he's gotten here. Once he's gotten a little pressure, he's folding under pressure. That's what it looks like if it doesn't work. You see what I'm saying? So what do you do?
Okay, but if the guys are not performing, you're just going to keep putting them on the field?
I understand that. That is the first problem, right? That is the first. Guys are not performing. I personally think you should change the tactical setup and keep the players. Keep the players that are there. You can't bench Aubameyang. You can't. He's your top goal scorer. He's been your top goal scorer since he's been here. You can't bench him. You can't bench Hector Bellerin right now, because he's played two bad games, but he probably played six really good games or six decent games. So I don't think you bench him for Ainsley Maitland-Niles right now, because I don't think Ainsley Maitland-Niles does any better, personally. I think the issue with Bellerin is getting caught out because you're asking him to do a lot. Excuse me. You're asking him to touch the ball a lot. You're asking him to make a lot more crosses. You're asking him to be more a part of the attack than he has been in recent years. And I just don't think he's the right guy for that. I don't think he's the, you know, he's the right person to continue. I don't think we should be forcing the ball to Hector Bellerin and Kieran Tierney. For one, these are two wingbacks that are not, they're not exactly a Nelson Semedo on the ball. Or they're not exactly, not even, that's a bad example. They're not exactly Dani Alves on the ball and Marcelo, right? They're not those two guys. They're not David Alaba. They're not Davies. They're not guys that are so comfortable on the ball that they're going to dribble two, three guys, knock it down the line, and hit a perfect cross. They're not going to. And Tierney, as great as he is a crosser, he's not a great dribbler either. If you look at him, he's really he's not elusive. He's not, doesn't have flair. They're not flair guys. You know what I'm saying? So I don't want to see that. I don't want to see, you know, 49, 50 passes from these guys. I don't want to see that. I would like to see a little less than that. You know, I'd like to see Saka making more passes than the. I don't want to see Saka making 10 and 15 less passes than Bellerin and Kieran Tierney. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to see, you know, Lacazette, who doesn't touch the ball as much, having less touches than Willian or Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang having less touches than our back line. Holding Gabriel and Xhaka has all made over 80 passes. They made over 80 passes today. 80. We couldn't get the ball in the box. So okay,
but let me ask. So when is he gonna be in the hot seat?
I think at this point
what does it have to take?
I think come January, our focus is probably gonna change to Europa League. I think it's going to be a Europa League or bust year. This is we've been 4 years in this competition. Four. It's our fourth year, right? If I'm not mistaken. Maybe our fifth. I want to say our fourth, yeah, though, because I know we lost. We've been to the final. We lost to Atletico. Went to the final. Lost in the round of 16, right? I think this is our fourth year, if I'm not mistaken. Either way, we've been in the competition long enough, right, to where I think we should win it. And there are some really good teams left in it, for sure. But I think, let's just say we buy Dominic in the January transfer window. Let's say we offload maybe Mustafi or Socrates or something like that. We let go a few guys. I think this team is definitely good enough to win Europa League, right? I mean, if you're looking down at the list, Roma's still in it. They've won their group. Leverkusen's second in their group as of today. Rangers and Benfica are top of another group. And I think Napoli and Real Sociedad are on the other side. And then you have Leicester in group G. Lille and Milan. And Milan's a really good team. They've been playing very good this year. Zlatan's there too as well. Villarreal is winning their group. And Tottenham, I think, is in second in their group. And those are pretty much the best teams left in it. The rest of the teams, like Wolfsburg, Hoffenheim, they're okay. But, I mean, really, you're looking at Tottenham, Villarreal, Lille, Milan, Leicester, Napoli. That's pretty much it. And us, and Roma. But do any of those teams really scare you? You know? As bad as we're playing right now, do you think that are any of those teams, you think we're going to get pulverized in two legs? No, I don't think so. I think we can beat any of those teams. I think it'll definitely be a luck of the draw. Now, what I'm worried about is, us playing Maccabi Tel Aviv in the round of 16. You know what I mean? A team that we should be beating, and then we end up going down 1-0 away from home, and then losing, the second leg 2-1 or something like that, like we did last year. I'm worried about the small teams for sure. But normally, when we play big teams in Europa, we usually play pretty good. We beat Napoli. What was that last year? Year before last, when we went to the final, we've beaten Valencia. We've beaten some big teams in Europa. I'm pretty confident that we have the shot, and this is the only way back. You know what happens if, let's say, we finish 12th in the Premier League, but we win Europa? You think we care? I think we're celebrating that the same way, right? Because we're back in Champions League. Yep. So I think at this point,
Chelsea did it a few years
ago. Exactly. So I think at this point, maybe you put all your chips in one basket and you say, all right, we're gonna go out, trigger this 25 million release clause, go get the center mid we need, and from round of 16 up, you play your top teams. You play your top team, play the kids in the EPL when we're playing small teams. Obviously, the big games you want to play, but prioritize Europa League. The thing about Europa League is so difficult is it's a round of 32. It's like that extra knockout round, instead of just a round of 16. Yeah. So that's kind of sucks because you're playing more games. But at this point, we're not playing for a Europa League spot anymore. That's for sure. And if we don't win it, we might not even be in Europa League next year, right? So I think we prioritize Europa League at this point. And if we get knocked out of Europa League, yeah, he's on the hot seat. I think at that point, I think you got to put him on the hot seat then. But okay. I don't see the value in starting over, especially this year. I don't see the value because you're putting yourself in another step back, because now you got to give another summer to another coach that's going to want another system. You know what I'm saying? And you're already having trouble offloading players. So I definitely don't see the value in that at all. But lastly, the Ozil thing, right? Can't get any worse. Might as well play Ozil. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no because I don't. Normally when we lose these games, right? Every game we lose now, it's going to be, well, we lost because we're not creative. We don't have a creative midfielder. Ozil's a creative midfielder, one of the best creators in the world. Why not play him? Right? That's the question most people are going to ask. I'm going to tell you why we don't play him. Ozil was one of the best number 10s in the world, one of the best passers in the world. Right? One of the best final passes, one of the best vision, visionary center attacking mids in this world.
He still is.
Can I ask you a question? How many center attacking mids are playing in the Premier League right now? Out and out number 10s. Give me five. Give me five out and out number 10s right now that are playing in the Premier League. Can't say James. James is playing out wide. KDB is an 8. Maybe Ziyech? Maybe? You can call Ziyech 1? Possibly? Right? And Ziyech plays out wide sometimes.
Well, he plays out wide too.
Yeah.
So if you're going to say Ziyech, then you got to say James.
No, but James plays out wide. James has been playing wide since the third game of the season.
So does Ziyech.
Yeah, so then not Ziyech. So I wouldn't say Ziyech. But I'm saying I've seen Ziyech in a few games playing in the 10, like behind a striker. But I don't see any. I've seen maybe one or two games of James, but the rest of them have been out wide.
I guess Madison.
Madison, maybe. I was going to say that. Madison's probably 1-2 as well. And Madison, I think, has played out wide before too as well, if I'm not mistaken. But Madison's 1. That's a good shout. But outside of that,
I'm not disagreeing with you.
There's none. There is none.
There's not many.
So, and on top of that, let's compare Madison to Ozil. One's far more dynamic. If we really want to cover, one covers way more distance with the ball at his feet. Ozil is a pass first attacking mid. I don't think that changes our team that much. Maybe he can unlock the team with a couple passes here and there, but he's not going to add goals to the team. We know that. He's not a goal scorer. He very seldom will score goals, especially probably in this setup. I think he'll score even less goals. Yes, he'll create chances for sure. So maybe that helps directly influencing. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But the fact of the matter is that is Ozil at his best. We can argue that we've seen more Ozil games not at his best than we have at his best. We've seen less of Ozil versus Ludogorets, less of Ozil, you know, versus Leicester when he did the when he scored the goal that everyone always talks about. We've seen less of those Ozils, and we've seen more of the lazy Ozils. We've seen more of the zero shots. We've seen the zero shots on target, zero dribbles, one dribble completed, one interception. We've seen more of those games. So, do I think it's worth financially, you know, putting him on the bench for $150,000 more or whatever that is, or whatever we save, not playing him? Is it worth it? That is a question for the manager to decide. If he's going to say no, or the club is going to say no, it's not worth it, I may agree, because I think at this point it's so controversial. It's more about him than it is about the team, and I don't think he makes the team that much better. I think he makes the team better. I think him being on the field will give us more chances. Yes. Is it, even if it's one more chance, maybe. But for what else, what we give up for that is $150,000, let's just say, you know, hypothetically speaking, is $150,000 worth him playing 60 minutes and giving us two more key passes? I don't think so. I don't think it does. I personally don't think it does. Maybe some people think it does. Maybe. And we're saying that, granted, he's in that shape. Granted, this we're getting prime Ozil, because in the last couple years we weren't. He's let us down a lot. Under Emery, I keep thinking about the final against Chelsea, the Europa League final. He was subbed off for Joe Willock in the 65th minute because he did F all. You know what I'm saying? He did nothing. And there's a lot of games where he's a passenger. He does nothing. So is it worth paying $150,000 to watch him run around the field and not do anything? I don't think it does. I personally don't think it does at this point. I think we have to, and on top of that, we're doing that for how long? We're doing that for a couple months, and then and then the contract's out. So maybe we just part ways and just say, all right, let's save, you know, $600,000 a month by not paying him, by not playing him. Maybe the club is like, I would rather us save that money not playing him than putting him on the field where he's not, you know, in a point where he's not going to help the team exponentially. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe. But for me personally, this is just my personal opinion. I don't think he helps the team as much as people, you know, think. So. I mean, like, look, absence makes the heart grow fonder, right? That's a big quote most people use. And that applies in football, too. The more you're away from, especially a guy like Ozil, the more you're away, people tend to remember him a bit more as a consistent player than he really was. So I don't think personally I would have made that move. What do you think?
I think we got a plan, man. I do agree with what you're saying. I you know, there's not too many out and out, you know, tens that are on the field at the moment, but if we want the results that we want and we want Aubameyang and Lacazette to score, I feel like they need that person behind them that's just going to feed them balls.
True, but then you also have to change the whole entire tactical setup, you know?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I've been saying this from when we first got Ozil, is all you need to do is just put two players behind him that are just going to sit there and let him create with other players. Yeah, but you, I don't like, think our that. Our attacking.
Eventually, we did that, though. Players. Eventually, we tried to get Coughlin. We tried that eventually, and then it didn't work. And like I said,
who you just named, bro.
Of course, on, I understand, bro. But he's a defensive midfielder. It's not.
We have better players now than what we did.
True, and that goes back to what I said, right, about Lacazette and Aubameyang being there back when Ozil was in his prime, and Ramsey and
of course and, they would have
been, I, would have been not, much better.
I wasn't disagreeing with that. I think
football has also evolved. I think the EPL has also evolved to much more dynamism in teams. And I don't think Ozil, who can be a passenger a lot, I think you have to change your whole tactical setup. I don't think it's as easy as putting, you know, Elneny and Xhaka behind him and letting him just sit in front of or behind the front three and just play balls all day. I don't think it works that way anymore. I think the teams are set up to more dynamism. And I think it's so much, the game is so much more about pressing and counter pressing. And Ozil doesn't like to do that. He occupies space, but he doesn't like to. Put it this way. If we're not going to start Reece Nelson or Pepe over Willian, mainly off over pressing, what makes you think Arteta is going to start, is going to play Ozil? You know what I'm saying? And well, I think that's well, the main
I'm,
thing.
I'm not. Yeah, I get that. I'm not saying I personally think like realistically we just need to like pay him his contract out and let him do what he has to do, yeah, bro. For sure. If you're not going to pay him, why are you just keeping him there? You might as well pay his contract out.
We tried that. The club has tried that. Ozil doesn't want to leave. Ozil's had offers from Galatasaray, supposedly, from Saudi Arabia. Yeah, Ozil does not want to leave.
I'm not talking about that. I'm saying, yo, you take your contract here, terminate.
Yeah, bye. But it's also, you can't just terminate his contract if he's willing to play. Like, it doesn't work that way. He has to be in agreement to this. If he's not in agreement to this, then he's on the team. He's just going to go. He's going to show up. As long as he's showing up to training, he's going to get paid. He's not going to get paid to be in the matchday squad. That's why the only thing you can do is not register him or put him in the matchday squad. Unless you guys reach an agreement, a buyout, then he's a part of the club. He's just not in the active roster. That's why he's not playing. It's not like we could just tell him, all right, leave. No, that's good. The contract. You sign a contract. You want his agent's gonna be like, you want our player services? You've signed the contract. He's showing up to training every day, available to be picked. It is up to you whether you pick him or not. Now, the rumors are he makes the match day squad, then he makes an extra 150K or whatever, which is why the rumor is allegedly we aren't putting him in the squad to save the money. That's what I've heard. I don't know if it's true. I do know, you know, with certain footballers' contracts, you do get a start, you know, a bonus or a specific salary for being in the match day squad, for being in the 18 or being registered. So maybe that, I mean, with a contract as big as Ozil, I can only imagine it being something like that. You see what I'm saying? Incentivized at him being in the squad. But yeah, he's at every opportunity to leave. If Ozil wanted to leave Arsenal, he would have left already. He would have been gone. He doesn't want to leave. There's no reason for him to leave. Think about it in his perspective. He's making 300 or how much ever he's making K per week. To stay in London with his wife that just had a baby, you know, he's not going to leave. Why would he leave London right now? Why would he leave his home when he doesn't? Especially now he's at no risk of injury or anything like that. He's chilling. So, you know, and from his standpoint, I wouldn't have left either. But because it's not his fault we gave him this lucrative contract. It's the club's fault. It's the club's bad decisions. And it's the club's bad decisions that has put us here in the first place. In hindsight, we should have given Arteta the job when we gave Emery the job, because 3 years, you know, 3 years later or 2 years after that, we're in the same position now that we have to give Arteta the growing pains part of this journey, right? Well, we could have did that 2 years ago, and we could have, who knows what a team 2 years in to Arteta's reign would look like, you know, who knows? Who knows what that team would look like? But again, that's on the board. That's on, you know, the front office, who's been poor, very, very, very poor. And speaking of the front office, that screenshot we had in our group, in the group chat you sent the other day with how great Milan's doing since even Ivan Gazidis has been there, is just another kick in the balls, right? It's just another kick. It's just another sore sight to look at, because Milan is booming right now. They're doing great with Ivan Gazidis at the helm. So remember when that guy was the biggest issue in Arsenal, and getting him out was supposed to lead us to greener pastures? Well,
look at that. Looking like he wasn't the problem. Looking like he was trying to figure things out his damn self.
Oh man, or Sven Mislintat. What about that? Remember him leaving? Oh God, man. I don't know.
Cronkies, you got some explaining to do, man.
You got some explaining to do.
You got some explaining to do, because right now y'all looking real shaky.
It's looking real good. It's looking real bad, man. It's looking real bad.
You better.
But like I said,
I want to see this January. I agree.
It's the only thing we can look forward to at this point.
Yeah, because realistically, I think he finishes out the season. I think we do. You know, I think we pick it up a little bit, but this January is going to be big for him, because if he can offload and bring in some extra players, we'll see.
Who else would you rather see? Not who, but like what position would you rather see us bring in outside of a central midfielder? Because I feel like as another striker, we have Balogun. I would rather just promote Balogun.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's going to happen, man. I honestly think he might go on loan for a year.
I hope he doesn't. And then, I would rather him not go on loan.
I hope he does. The reason why I hope he does is because he's not going to play right now.
Yeah, you want him to get games, but I would rather send Eddie.
Just because I know.
I think he's a better player than Eddie personally. I think he has more in his locker than Eddie does.
Yeah, but he's not doing that. Eddie's staying.
Yeah, of course.
Eddie's staying, and I feel like he needs to go out on loan, go to a good team. Hopefully he can go out on loan to an EPL team.
Yeah,
and actually get
or some even game. A League 2 team. I mean, I'm fine with him being an EFL Championship team. I if he can play every week, I would have no issue with him going to Charlton or going to
him go to a Championship team. You know, a little bit more competition.
Yeah, I would rather, because you play more games. You play more games in the Championship team than the EPL. So I would rather see. I don't see him going to, you know, Brighton Hove Albion and going to play every game. You know, I just don't see that happening right now. I do see him going to a Division II team that's, you know, that and playing a lot. I can see that happening a lot. So
yeah, I hope he goes out on loan, and
I wouldn't say a year though. You know, I'd say six months. I'd say just rest of the year, finish it out, and then come back.
I'm gonna say the whole year.
So you don't think you don't think he could come back in the summertime and fight for a spot?
No,
because I think this summer we'll find out what we're gonna do with Eddie. I think Eddie's either gonna be, because I think Lacazette probably leaves this summer, more than likely.
Well, right? It depends because if Lacazette leaves, I think we bring in another high profile striker that is coming to start.
I also think Martinelli would be the second striker.
I was gonna bring that up. That was another reason why I said him going out on loan for a whole year is gonna be more beneficial for him, because when Martinelli comes back, I feel like he's gonna be more of a striker, because I honestly think that he wants to keep Aubameyang out left.
I think so too, but like I said, I think that's why it's up to Eddie, because if we look at Eddie this year or at the end of the year and we say, hey, he's either gonna be the next guy up, or we send him on loan again and we give him another shot because he's young, or we sell him. But I think we need to make the move now. And I think that is because you have a guy like Balogun that hasn't signed the extension yet, that clearly thinks he's better than Eddie or thinks he's ready. And I think you give him the shot. I personally think he's better. I personally think he is more in his locker. I think he's more dynamic. I think he's better with the ball at his feet. And he's younger. So,
well, I don't have to give my take on Eddie, so
yeah, for sure, for sure. But anyways, I think we got to the time now. It's enough. It's enough crying about this, about spilled the milk, I guess you could say. Gotta look towards the future. We can't change what's in the past. And Arsenal currently, I don't even want to tell you where we sit currently, but we have Europa League action coming up. Dundalk. On Thursday, I think 12:55, they are the worst team in the group. 0 wins, 0 ties, 5 losses, 15 goals against, 6 goals for. Is this at Dundalk? I think this is at Dundalk. I expect us to have 0 starting 11 players in this game. I think if we don't see Eddie or Balogun, Emil Smith Rowe, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, Reese, Aziz, some of the U23s. I think this game means absolutely nothing to us. If we lose this game 5-0, I'm pretty sure we're still in the first place. So I don't see us. I don't want to see Aubameyang traveling. I don't want to see Lacazette traveling. Gabriel, none of those guys. I think we should be. I think we should definitely see. We should definitely be seeing the kids. And it should be a very kid-heavy rotation. I think Balogun should get the start, personally. I think he should. I think they're going to give it to Eddie, naturally. But I think Pepe will probably play too as well.
Why not put him and Eddie up top together?
Yeah, start both of them. Forget it. Play 4-4-2.
I wouldn't mind that.
4-4-2. Put Pepe on the right. Reese on the left, or vice versa. Willock and Emil Smith Rowe maybe in the midfield.
I want to see Ainsley.
I want to see Aziz too. I think he's a buy. I rate him a lot. The young kid looks good. Or maybe you play Ainsley and Emil Smith Rowe. I think Emil Smith Rowe should get a start. I think maybe you throw Saliba in there. I think it's about time to do that. You know, Callum Chambers, Cedric. You know, we should be seeing a lot of kids. I don't think there's any reason why we shouldn't see any kids. And then Sunday we have Burnley, who's normally a tough outfit too as well. Defensively, you're gonna see another, you know, two banks of four again. So that should be fun. But Burnley is, I think, how many points below the drop zone? Oh, I think they're in the drop zone. They're in the drop zone right now. They have 6 points. So this hopefully should be a confidence win for us. Hopefully if all goes well. And I think after Burnley, what's our next PPL game? It starts to hotten up. We have Southampton, who's been very tough this season, been hot and cold. Everton. And then Man City in the EFL quarterfinal. And then after Christmas, we have Chelsea, big game. So a lot of football left. Hurtful North London derby loss, but we move forward. And all faith in the Gunners. So, guys, we appreciate you. If you've gotten this far in the pod, appreciate you listening. Appreciate all the comments. Like I said, we're going to be definitely recording more often to try to get this content out. So, again, thank you for that.
Thank you.
We'll hopefully try to get a review show for Dual Duck. We haven't done a lot of Europa League review shows because, you know, it hasn't been so many to talk about. But with the kids playing, maybe we can do a pod just specifically on the kids, a quick 30-minute pod or something like that. Before we get into the weekend games. But we'll try. We'll see what happens. But if not anything else, we thank you again for all the support. It means the world to us. We'll continue to keep making more episodes. Again, episode 10. Congrats to my co-host Sick for being with me for 10 episodes so far. So we're hoping to keep going from there, man.
Always. Yep, definitely.
For sure. Well, anyways, again, thank you guys. Have a great night, great day, whenever you're listening to this. Peace.
Thank you. Peace.